Welcome, dumbheads, to this week's Megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one episode per day identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Heroes Unlimited, the gloriously ramshackle superhero RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the week's previous episodes in one Megasode, like this one. If you'd like to play along at home, we're reading Heroes Unlimited Revised 2nd Edition, 2nd printing from December 1998. Today we're discussing page 36 of Heroes Unlimited. Today introduces us to multiple personality disorder. If you're a fan of insensitive portrayals of mental disorders in media, this is going to be right up your alley. Multiple personality disorder, of course, a time-honored classic in the genre. But here's the thing, these episodes are only like 5 to 10 minutes long. On the rare occasion that the rules are okay, or there are no rules to speak of, sometimes I gotta vamp a little by making a lot of moral judgments about things, but these rules are so bad, we don't have time for me to disapprove of the content on like ethical or social grounds. This is just some straight up bad design. So we have to get right into that. The rules for who takes control of the character's body at different times, like which personality takes charge, that's on another page and it's going to have to wait for then for us to talk about it. Suffice it to say, this can happen unexpectedly. If you run into something traumatic, if you run into a psychic antagonist, if a fight goes south, having another personality take you over could easily end up being sprung on the player and the GM unexpectedly. So the question is, who are these other people inside you? Who are your other selves? And how will this contribute to the fun of the game? How will it lend comedy and color, which as we know is the motto of the Crazy Hero section? Let's run these things down. Each of these personalities has a random alignment. So more or less, good and evil, 50-50. Let's just talk about the good personalities. Let's save for tomorrow the prospect of having this cruel and hideous personality locked inside you that you may unexpectedly have to roleplay in the middle of a scene. Let's just talk about if you get good roles and you end up with good personalities inside you. What kind of fun roleplaying experiences can you expect then? And this is going to run slightly into the next page, but it makes sense to do it all in one big chunk. On a roll of 1 to 10, you have a personality that is despondent. Quote, withdrawn. Curls up into a fetal position and gurgles. Cannot fight or take any action. Cannot use powers or even communicate. Sounds great. How comedic and colorful. By the way, unless you have access to a psionic character or a professional hypnotist, there is a decent chance you're going to have to play this personality, air quotes, play this personality, for the long term. Let's continue the tour. If you roll an 11 through 20, you are a coward, albeit a good aligned one. Afraid of everything. Will fight only if absolutely necessary and then only enough to escape. Will surrender at the slightest hint of trouble. Super abilities can be used only for self-defense. Always acts last, skills are at minus 10%. This one seems really fun too. You don't want to go adventuring. You don't want to go on missions. You can't use your powers except to get yourself out of the plot. You always go last, you're minus 10% on everything you do. And if you can't escape, then you surrender. This will be a fun character to slot unexpectedly into the middle of a superhero plot. Let's continue the tour. If you roll a 21 through 30, you are a pacifist. You will not fight under any circumstances. You can use your powers, but rarely against others. Unlike the other personalities, this one does know about the dominant personality, and there's a 40% chance that the pacifist personality can be convinced to let the other personality take over. This one is actually not bad. This is what you want from all these personalities. Something that would encourage you to roleplay differently, to play a different personality who uses the character's abilities in a different way, and is not going to stick the player being non-functional for perhaps multiple sessions. So pacifist, thumbs up. The next one is 41 to 50, Righteous Indignation, a character with a black and white view of good and evil. Can 50-50 be convinced to let other personalities take over if appropriate? Can use the character's powers? Again, not too bad. You just basically got to play an old school paladin for a couple of sessions, which is maybe the right length of time to play an old school paladin. On a 51 to 60, you are the normal. A mundane, innocent, bumbling, nerd-like youth, which is incidentally my favorite band. I've got a nerd-like youth poster up on my wall right now. This personality knows nothing about super abilities, crime fighting, or heroics. Shy, totally bewildered about super stuff. No recollection of the other personalities. No idea of super abilities. No combat training, only get one attack per melee. And all your skills go down to high school level. So hey, this will go well. You get converted into a well-meaning but incompetent character who has no skills outside of a high school education and no superpowers. Once again, this is tops for extended play. And you don't even get your youth back. You just act like a teenager. But you've got the body of a grown, albeit superhero physiqued, 30-something. It's going to be like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. like with Xander, your boyish incompetence will be exacerbated by the fact that you are clearly a 35-year-old man. Next personality up, 61 through 70, the wild man, overzealous, gregarious, hyperactive, delusions of grandeur. This personality has the frenzy from anger and frenzy from pain conditions. So not the worst frenzies, some bonuses to various things. Can leap 10 feet further due to being crazy, which is a stereotype I don't approve of. Let's not stigmatize people with mental disabilities with this old chestnut that they're really good at pole vault. It's 2018. We're better than this. On a 71 to 80, the hypochondriac, obsessed with cleanliness, obsessed with avoiding injury and disease, will continually whine about potentially filthy or germ-laden environments. If injured in the slightest, even one SDC, will whine and moan about it for hours. Never gets initiative, minus 5% on all skills, has a decent chance of letting the other personalities take over if necessary to protect him or herself. So, the hypochondriac, okay. It's always risky to instruct the player to play annoying, especially in the direction of the other PCs, but you can get rid of the hypochondriac personality if need be, so okay. 81 through 90, opposite sex. You roll a random disposition, so you get a separate personality for this character. There's a 40% chance that this personality doesn't know about the powers of the character at all, therefore can't use them, and has no combat skills and is minus 20% to all skills. So that's a 60% chance this will work okay for the campaign. You just play a gender-swapped version of your character, which admittedly could be fun, maybe the most fun to have on this table. The other 40% of the time, you're stuck with a character who has a random personality, no powers, no combat effective abilities, sucks at everything. And then finally, on a 91 to 100, you get the anti-super dude, a personality that is against the entire concept of superpowered beings and vigilantism, will not use powers for any reason, will not engage in superheroics, will not play the game, is what they should have said. On a roll of 91 to 100, your character will not participate in the plot, will obstruct the GM's attempts to move the story forward, will refuse to effectively defend him or herself in the face of superpower danger, will actively resist when the player, sick of playing this feeb, tries to put another personality in charge. So to sum up, that's 10 personalities rolled randomly that your character might get. Of those 10 personalities, 4 of them, the despondent, the coward, the normal, and the anti-super dude, are absolutely incapable of participating in superheroics. One more personality, the opposite sex, has a 40% chance of being in the same boat, having no combat abilities and no ability to use powers. And if something traumatic happens to the character unexpectedly, and you get stuck playing one of these losers, it could be sessions. If, for example, you're out in the middle of the jungle where you can't just, you know, Google your local hypnotist and get this shit sorted out, it could be session after session that you're stuck playing this useless fucking load. Of all these, though, the dumbest thing on the page is the despondent. There is a 10% chance that your other quote-unquote personality is that your character can do nothing but curl up in the fetal position and gurgle. Please note that this personality cannot communicate, which probably takes hypnosis off the table as a solution, which means if you don't have a psionic handy, the rest of the group just has to pick up your curled up body and carry you through the rest of the adventure. This is not the color and comedy I was promised. Today we're discussing page 37 of Heroes Unlimited, and do I have a doozy for you. Yesterday, we discussed the good aligned personalities that a multiple personalities crazy hero can have. Just if you need to add a little spice to your campaign and you want to have a fun thing where when your character experiences severe trauma, then they revert to a personality that can do nothing but curl up in the fetal position and gurgle, perhaps for sessions at a time. You know, just that kind of lighthearted fun. But there is also a dark side to comic book multiple personalities. They have a propensity for evil. 50% of personalities will be evil, and they are chosen, or rather randomly rolled, from a separate list of evil roles that the player may be unexpectedly called upon to play in the middle of the action. Again, perhaps for sessions at a time. Now, last time I just gave you the tour of the good personalities, and we talked about the fact that roughly half of those were like literally unplayable. They gave you a character who could not participate in the plot of an adventure game. And then half of them were all right. I want to organize today differently. I want to really take a detailed measurement of how low we can sink in this section. So we're going to be counting down evil personalities from least to most unpleasant. Number 7 is greedy. Now I want you to listen carefully to this one and see if this reminds you of anyone. Quote, a personality that craves wealth and fame. He will always look for the profit and value of any activity. He is a stingy braggart who always connives to get the most money and all the glory. He tends to be secretive, sneaky, deceptive, underhanded, and self-centered. Although he knows about the other personalities, he is extremely reluctant to let any of, quote, these losers take control. So you've got all the powers of the superhero identity, but you're evil, you're a self-centered narcissist, you're out to make a profit at any expense, and you refer to other people as those losers. This isn't to my taste as a role player, but if you're interested in a bunch of rich, bullying braggarts who fuck people over for their money at any cost while ranting about what losers everybody else is, you may be interested in a very popular LARP called American Capitalism. Number 6. Moving on from avarice into the realm of wrath, we have the bloodthirsty personality. This is a personality that loves to fight, hurt people, torture, and kill. A sadistic bully. Always strikes for maximum damage, tortures and kills to prove his or her superiority. So here we have a personality who gets all the superhero's powers, but uses them to pathologically improve his own self-image by killing and torturing others indiscriminately. Yet another wonderful source of comedy and color. Number 5, the psychopath. I know what you're thinking. That wasn't the psychopath? Oh no, my friend. That was a mere starter. That was the fucking cheese sticks. We're on to the main dish now. The psychopath, quote, a wild, daring, deadly personality who thrives on danger. Nothing is too risky or impossible, tends to be reactionary, cruel, and strikes with deadly force. Also likes cat and mouse games as long as he is the cat. The psychopath doesn't get any of the character's normal skills. Instead, the psychopath gets hand-to-hand expert at third level, weapon proficiencies in blunt weapons, knives, revolvers, automatic pistols, rifles, gets the sniper skill, has prowl for sneaking around and slitting people's throats, climbing, pilot automobiles, pilot motorcycle and truck as well, and escape artist, gets extra STC, and gets all the main character's powers. So this character is also cruel and sadistic, like the bloodthirsty character, but is also wild and daring, which means potentially self-destructive as well. The bloodthirsty character is at least selfish, so could perhaps be manipulated through self-interest, like, hey, as long as we let you torture other people, maybe you won't torture us. Not so the psychopath. And the player gets to trade all their regular skills for a new batch of skills that are basically only good for serial killing. If you roll this personality, you can look forward to some scene-stealing, psychopathic grandstanding, as the character doesn't just torture on the side, doesn't just abduct and mutilate random NPCs for shits and giggles like during downtime, but takes risks to be cruel when the stakes are highest, in the event that you take them on your adventures. Which, why would you? You would either lock them up in a cell, or, if you're short on time, kill them. All in an execution scene that I'm sure will be jam-packed with color and comedy. But we haven't hit the bottom of the barrel yet. Number 4, the megalomaniac. An arrogant, superior, and totally self-serving personality. The description emphasizes that the character is absolutely ruthless, nothing else matters to them, this is a true sociopath. However, rather than just fucking off from the group and going to kick puppies or whatever, this character will try to usurp control of the group and take control by any means necessary over the other player characters. Remember the Palladium Credo, you gotta play that evil, bro. Even though this character is not like quite the torture fetishist that the last two are, it's more disruptive because you may occasionally have a group that's like just fine with sort of having a bell car in the group. Somebody who's going to go do evil shit, but like when time comes around to like do the thing, execute the plan, they can be okay. The megalomaniac, though, can't be contained. The megalomaniac is always angling to control and dominate other player characters. So if you want player agency in your game, you can't have this character because this player has instructions to take over the other player characters from their players. And if there's one thing player characters hate second most of all, it's losing their agency. If there's one thing they hate most of all, it's losing their stuff. And that brings us to number 3, the kleptomaniac. This personality is a compulsive thief who steals from everyone all the time just for fun. Like the psychopath, this personality loses all of the character's normal skills and gets a handful of bad guy skills, including motorcycles. For some reason, all the bad personalities know how to ride motorcycles. So this is a one note, like, this personality takes over, and you immediately start stealing everything from the people around you. Of course, they probably don't know in character that you're a kleptomaniac if you're good at it, which means the other players are all going to be staring daggers at you, while you, in character, hide the fact that your character is now stealing all their money and all their equipment, even if you don't need it because you steal for fun. This one gets a special place near the top of the list, because hopefully the character will just steal wallets and stuff, but let's say they steal something really cool and important, you know, somebody's big over-the-shoulder laser death cannon. It's not like you can coincidentally go into battle with a giant over-the-shoulder laser death cannon the next day. Either you gotta sell it, or you gotta ditch it somewhere. You can't really use it, which is fine for you, because you just stole it for fun. But what it means is, you're probably gonna like throw this thing in the ocean, or ditch it somewhere where it's not gonna be connected with you. Which means that even if you only play this character for one session before the rest of the player group inevitably gets together to beat the shit out of you until you either die or revert to your dominant personality, the group may permanently lose important resources because this character was briefly in control. We're in the home stretch now. Number two, the traitor. Quote, a personality that goes with what is always best for him. He will betray a friend or cause for money, revenge, or to save himself. He will sell or steal information, equipment, or persons without hesitation. To this personality, everything has a price, and he intends to cash in on it. The character is amoral, cold, and merciless, taking action that will benefit only him. Completely untrustworthy. He gets all of the powers and skills of the main character and, vitally, will willingly give up his dominant position to another personality to save himself. Here's a character who's going to ruin your goddamn campaign. The traitor will do anything to anyone for advantage, right? So what you're telling the character is, just be totally ruthless and do anything to the other player characters, right? Like, not just any person, but specifically your close friends and allies, the other player characters. Do the worst you can think of to them, if necessary, to get you what you want. No loyalty whatsoever. However, it's a slow burn. You're not going to do it if it's not to your advantage, and if they start to catch on to you, you can give up to the dominant personality and wait for the next time that the traitor surfaces. If you play this character long enough, there is going to be a scene where the traitor unexpectedly takes control and fatally betrays at least one other party member, if not the whole party, to get out of trouble. There's no getting away from it, because if the conditions aren't perfect for the traitor to need to do that and be able to do that, then it'll simply go dormant and wait to have that scene later. As someone whose first beloved player character in a real tabletop game was senselessly killed by another player character, let me tell you, this will ruin campaigns and ruin friendships. And to instruct players to do it, like to demand that, oh, if you want your experience points this week, Chad, I really need to see you amorally trying to ruin other people's characters. It is the height of shitty game design. Almost. We're only on number two. Number one, Jack the Ripper. Quote, a twisted personality that preys on the weak, mostly women. Some demented obsession drives this personality to hurt and torment women. If any opponents are female, she will be his first target. The more she fights, the better he likes it. This is a sick individual who loves to torture and watch torment. The character, of course, prefers blade weapons, gets a bonus to strike, and can use all the character's skills and abilities. So I guess the list format spoils this one, but if I had to pick the dumbest thing on this page, out of all these great ideas for adding color and comedy to your superhero campaign, it would be a step in character creation where you randomly roll that, on random occasions, your good and noble superhero reverts to an evil personality who you must roleplay as such, who, in the middle of superheroic action, will take a bladed weapon and use it to engage in gendered violence to torture and mutilate females. And the party's got to deal with this shit until they can take you to a professional hypnotist or psionic character, which could mean several sessions, or until everyone leaves the campaign out of sheer disgust, which ought to be quite a bit sooner. Obviously, there was no competition for number one. This personality is the worst because it transcends disruptive. This personality's presence will absolutely ruin your campaign. But if it doesn't, you need to quit. Like, if your player group rolls with this punch, you do not need to be rolling with them. You do not want to be talking to your buddies at the gaming store like, yeah, I'm getting a little bit frustrated with this Heroes Unlimited campaign. You know, it was fun at first. We were fighting a lot of criminals. Fought off some invading aliens, but then one of the superheroes turned into a woman-hating torture serial killer, and we've just been doing a lot of graphic descriptions of him torturing women for like 3 or 4 weeks now. I'm really hoping it'll end soon, but you know, I'm gonna go this Thursday, and he's probably gonna, you know, he's gonna torture women. I'm just gonna eat pizza. You need to run away. You need to get away from those people. Today we're discussing page 38 of Heroes Unlimited. We are at the end, at last, of the insanity section. We're done talking about all kinds of mental illnesses. We've really run the gamut of supposed insanities, from the psychoses to the phobias to multiple personality disorders, superheroes who think their powers come from the sun, superheroes who think their power comes from weird foods, superheroes with anger problems. The whole section is a veritable Sears wish book for players who need to be the center of attention by any means necessary. And if you haven't found what you're looking for on all the preceding pages of lower grade, wacky and fun mental disabilities, this page is going to do it for you. However, before we get to the piece de resistance, let's briefly finish up with multiple personality disorder, just because, you know, we've spent a couple of days talking about the good but ineffectual personalities that can be hiding within you. We've talked about the evil personalities that can be lurking within you, waiting to destroy the campaign, and indeed all of your friendships in real life. And we haven't really told the whole story about this until we've talked about how these personalities manifest. Sometimes a thing happens in a role-playing game where you have a everybody act crazy episode. You'll recognize this from all genre television, basically, all kinds of urban fantasy, horror, sci-fi TV shows. They all have a everybody act crazy episode where everybody gets like a new personality or loses their inhibitions or gets inhabited by the spirits of an ancient culture or something like that. Sometimes that'll happen in a superhero story, and that's not such a big deal. Even if one of them is evil, they can be the antagonist of the week. It's a nice kind of mix-up for everybody. I want to emphasize that this is not that, and that's why all these personalities are such bad design. The way this works, in brief, is that you've got one dominant personality if you have multiple personalities. This is the main character that you're creating through character creation. Let's call her Vanilla. But then, she has a dark side. Let's call her Chocolate. And you may have more than one personality. You may, in the great tradition of the mostly bullshit book Sybil, you may have lots and lots of personalities generated in response to a variety of traumas, or because your therapist was getting bored and you needed more stuff to talk about, so you came up with a teenage boy voice, for example. So your character, Vanilla, may have yet another personality, a teenage boy within her, Butter Brickle, if you will. So you've got a complex situation mentally happening with the character who's got multiple personalities. There are a specific set of situations that will cause a new personality to take over. Some of the personalities have a chance of giving up control back to Vanilla if the situation calls for it. Others will not give up control under any circumstances, so you would have to engineer one of this like short list of ways that you can sort of shake up the character like an eight ball and have one of their personalities surface at random. So let's suppose Vanilla is a regular superheroine. Chocolate is like her kleptomaniac anarchist counterpart, who's sort of like a nefarious shoplifter, uses her powers exclusively to steal like jewelry and small electronics. And then like Butter Brickle is her 13-year-old boy personality, who is just a doofus. So what can happen to Vanilla that would cause Chocolate or Butter Brickle to surface? If she's up against a lot of psionics, this could happen pretty often because there are a few different psionic methods. But you know what? It's a wide, wide universe of superhero subgenres. We might all be playing mecha pilots. We might be doing a street-level campaign where like only one of us is like a minor mutant and the rest of us are like an adventuring stage magician and a man-hunting vigilante and a kung fu guy. In which case, we're not going to have a psionic in the group really at all if we're in one of those subgenres. So barring those options, what can you do if you're adventuring alongside Vanilla and she loses her shit, and now you're dragging Butter Brickle's ass around, and all he does is get kidnapped by supervillains and not change his socks enough? How do you solve this problem? If you have someone who has the hypnotism skill, then you've got a 50% chance of that working. Barring that, let's say that you are in an adventure where you're, you know, out in space, you're on the front lines, you're on a jungle adventure in the Savage Land, you're on a time travel adventure to feudal Japan. In any of those myriad cases where you can't engage the services of a professional hypnotist, you have two options remaining for getting your friend back from the clutches of teenage boyhood. Number one, severe shock or trauma, something like seeing a family member killed, having traumatic drug-induced hallucinations, or intense pain slash torture. Which, you know what, if the whole group rolled on the random insanity table, there's going to be a lot of people in the group who are hella into torture. So if the group's got the stomach for it, and I pray that you don't, then that would be one option. Number two, coma or near death. Like Old Yeller, you sit Butter Brickle down in front of an Xbox or a PlayStation, one of the two. Something tells me Butter Brickle is going to have strong opinions about this, but whichever he prefers. You sit him down, you pat him on the head, and then you beat the ever-loving shit out of him until he falls into a coma. And when he wakes up, with luck, he'll be Vanilla. If he's Chocolate, you got to grab that bat again and go back to work. There are so, so many campaigns and characters who would not be able to access either a psionics character or a hypnotist, which means that switching a character who's in a really bad random personality back to their regular self, the character that the player wanted to play in the first place, is likely going to be a multi-session situation where you are fighting your way back from feudal Japan or fighting your way out of the Savage Land. And that whole time you're stuck with your random personality. This is what makes something like the totally non-functional despondent personality or the ruthless player character killing traitor personality so dangerous. This is not like that Halloween episode of Buffy where everybody got new personalities based on their costumes. This is like that season of Buffy where Angel turns into Angelus and becomes the big bad of the season. Spoilers for Buffy, but only minor spoilers. I mean, spoilers for all of Buffy. Your favorite hero becomes a villain and your favorite villain becomes a hero. So everything is wrong with this setup. Butterbrickle is just one example of a personality that you maybe would not necessarily feel comfortable beating into a coma, but you might very well end up in a situation where circumstances demand, heroism even demands that you do so. If you've got your friend basically trapped in their own body, unconscious, and you don't have the powers you need to like save the world, and the only way to get them, because you don't have a psychic nearby, is to beat this teenage boy personality nearly to death. Even something as simple as having like a person who's close to the character be able to have a chance, maybe based on their MA, like maybe make a charm impress roll to try to draw out the dominant personality. Just something you can try short of violence toward a potentially innocent personality formed in response to trauma already would make this like a little more of a superhero story and a little less of let's kick the shit out of this boy until his powers come out. Now, I said all that to say this. As offensive and badly designed as multiple personalities is, it's still not as dumb as the final entry in the crazy hero section, which is also on this page. This is the dumbest thing on this page, the crazy man. Now, I can't explain this character to you any better than the author can, so I'm just going to quote. The crazy man type hero is a wild, flamboyant, and jocular character. This person might be a cross between Daffy Duck, Errol Flynn, and a stand-up comic on speed. Zany, dynamic, caustic, and hyper. Who needs a predicate in a sentence when you've got all those adjectives? This guy is the wisecracking daredevil who seems to be as cocky and carefree leaping into the jaws of death as he is at a tea party. Pause for laughter, since tea party is a wacky phrase. He will batter his opponent with sarcastic quips, bad jokes, and silly observations while he's socking it out with him or facing the barrel of a gun. Then we get a little bit about how the character is hyperactive. Quote, the crazy man heroes seem to have a constant habit of laughing, giggling, or snickering at the most unusual times. Usually this occurs during combat, under high-pressure situations, and triumph. Sometimes this can be extremely effective in rattling one's foe. Other times it is downright annoying. They also tend to come up with inane battle cries. This is a rare place where Palladium actually was slightly ahead of the curve. This is like a couple of years after Deadpool became the Deadpool that we know today, and before he was a really major character. This was about 4 years after the success of Jim Carrey in The Mask at the box office. It's like right around the beginning of the popularity of like the wacky, random superhero or antihero. It's not, as usual, that Palladium was far out of the zeitgeist here. It's that the zeitgeist sucked. The late 90s, early 2000s LOL random antihero is a terrible character. And it's bad already in a scripted medium where you can, you know, write the best jokes you can think of and put them in the mouth of this obnoxious character who will never shut up. But in an improv medium, I mean, you can't read this description without thinking of somebody like Robin Williams. This like nonstop comedy patter. There's almost no one who can do that. However, there are a lot of young gamers who embarrassingly think that they can. And the crazy man, it's enabling is what it is. It's giving a rules framework to the person who wants to constantly be the center of attention, doesn't want to take anything seriously. The player who is a frustrated stand-up comic and wants to put on a show for the rest of the group. Because insanities like alignments are mandates in the Palladium system, you get docked experience if you don't play your character and you get XP for playing your character. You got to follow the mandate that you chose in character creation. So this is giving a license to suck to your most obnoxious player in the group, who's going to be pointing at this book like, no, it says here, I never get like scared or emotionally affected by things. I'm heedless of my personal safety. I just ridicule everything. It says right here in the rules that I must make bad jokes. I mean, it specifies in this description that the character can often be found standing on his head. Who wants to fucking sit still for this in their superhero game? You can tell how badly this is going to go from the text itself. Quote, in combat, the crazy man hero usually appears to be fearless, leaping into a foray, presumably that should say fray, unless the superhero is obsessed with hunting for mushrooms, which is a possibility, more on that later, leaping into the foray with a joke on his lips and armed with his bare hands and a crowbar, and then in parentheses, that's a joke, son. Who the fuck are you, Foghorn Leghorn? A player with this sense of humor should never be allowed near this character. Just for me personally, I have hated playing with players and characters who behave in this way, and I find this to be the dumbest thing on this page. However, I can back that up with some design problems as well. Because let's say that you want to play an LOL random crazy character. You want to be the crazy man. The party's into it. For God knows what reason, you deserve each other. What mechanically do you get? Like, aside from the flavor about you being as wacky and crazy as Daffy Duck, what mechanically happens to your character to help you with this crazy man archetype? You get a minus 10 to all skills other than physical, piloting, and weapon proficiencies. You get a plus 10% to prowl, climbing, swimming, gymnastics, and dancing. Notably, this means that your intense hyperkinetic hyperactivity makes you better at hiding. You get a bonus to roll with punch, which is going to come in handy because I know I want to punch you. And you get some subsidiary insanities to give your character some LOL random quirks. You get two phobias and one obsession. Now, we didn't even talk about obsessions because we had so much to talk about in this section, but suffice it to say, they have nothing in common with what an obsession really is. What it is instead is it's like a list of random things, and then you roll randomly to determine whether you love or hate the thing. What might you be obsessed with? What might you love or hate? Here's some highlights from the table. The opposite sex, that old chestnut of palladium derangements. You might be obsessed with getting into the pants of every woman that you see, or you might be a raging misogynist who hates and distrusts everything a woman says. People are going to bust a gut at your wacky antics. The ladies are going to blush and be like, Daffy Duck just called me a bitch. What a zany character. Or it could be a specific individual, including, it specifies, a player character. You might be constantly after one of the player characters, or you might obsessively hate one of the other player characters, so that you spend all your time and energy trying to find ways to hurt them specifically. Or hey, here's another wacky thing you could do with your LOL random character. You could be obsessed with alcohol, so that you develop a severe and crippling drinking problem. There are rules for it in this game, so this is not going to be, you know, comedic, you're like a comedy wino, you're like Otis from Mayberry. No, you are going to get severely addicted and definitely let the team down and have big problems in your life. In an LOL random way, don't worry. You're going to be standing on your head all the time. You're going to start to have a lot of liver problems. It's going to be a lot of fun. Or you could be obsessed, hatred style, with crime busting, which means you would be obsessed with never, under any circumstances, participating in the thing this game is about. So even if you and your group are all a bunch of real-life butterbrickles whose sense of humor has never evolved beyond early 2000s Adult Swim, the crazy man option still sucks because it may very well saddle you with something that is not very wacky or zany at all. Today we're discussing page 39 of Heroes Unlimited. This is going to be a short one because there's not much on this page. The big heading says tradition and history. The section that we're entering is going to be about legacy heroes, heroes who take on the identities of previous generations. But what it's really going to be is setting. And this is something that's new for Heroes Unlimited. The setting of the earlier edition of Heroes Unlimited is pretty much only implicit, at least in the core book. We know that things exist because there are rules for them. So there are robots, there are aliens, et cetera, but there's not really an indication. I mean, there's a little bit in the mutant section about mutant prejudice, because of course there is, but there's not really a sense of the world. This edition gets a little more specific, and we can start to see, like, what are the assumptions about the setting that your Heroes Unlimited campaign is going to take place in. Legacy heroes are a part of that, but honestly, what's a little more interesting to me is what we're going to see about what the assumptions are of a superhero world. There's a big illustration at the top of the page. We've got a superhero soaring over a city. He's in a very traditional Superman-style superhero outfit. In a slight divergence from tradition, he has a very wispy little goatee. It looks like maybe he's just starting to grow it. It's just a little bit of thin mustache running down into just a little thin sort of single strip of hair going down just over his chin. It's quite a 90s look. It's a little bit dated. More importantly, for practical reasons, this is not a good fashion choice for a superhero because it creates a continuity problem. You're going to need to hire a continuity specialist to kind of like help you with your grooming if you're trying to maintain something like this, if you have a secret identity, because it's varying length, like how recently you've shaved, like how it's growing in. This guy's clearly just started. Like, he looks like he's probably in his late 20s, early 30s, but you know, maybe he's a late bloomer. Maybe it's just starting to come in, but there's something very like bad choice at the high school prom about this facial hair. Like, he looks like a sophomore who thought he could have a goatee for prom, but it didn't quite get there. Like, his fingertips are just brushing the edge of goatee, and he's like, I'm going with it. I can attest from personal experience that the look of facial hair that is, like, pretty raggedy, but it's just, like, sort of coming in, and you dare not trim it because you're afraid it's going to take, like, another month to fill out, that's a very distinctive look. And if I see it on a superhero and a mild-mannered reporter in the same day, it's like a fucking thumbprint. I'm going to know that's the same guy. Especially in the age of Facebook. Like, you're going to get a notification right away when the local major metropolitan newspaper puts up a photo of you saving the city, and it's like, your scraggly beard was tagged in this photo. God damn it. I knew I should have shaved. Yes, you should have. Get rid of that bullshit goatee. You are putting your friends and family in danger. Other than this big picture of the superhero with the reckless facial hair, all we get is just like a little chunk of text on this page. Now, normally I try to be careful about not reading all of the text or all of the salient text on a given page. I'm trying not to give away the value of this book in the podcast despite the deep dive, but here I have a point to make that really requires me to use all of it. So here's the totality of the text on this page. Quote, the fundamental concept in any game, comic book, or story about super beings is that such people are real. Thus, in this fictional version of our modern Earth, us ordinary folk have come to accept that superhumans, mutants, and non-humans, possessing extraordinary power, soar through our smog-filled skies and fight for truth and justice. Such beings are relatively commonplace, say one in a million, so just about every major North American city has one or two, if not more. In this world of super beings, many of the people turn to the, quote, good guys for their protection, guidance, and camaraderie. Meanwhile, the very existence of these, quote, heroes seems to draw out their evil counterparts, and leads to conflicts between good and evil. Of course, the very nature of humankind spawns such melodrama, for humans seem to have an equal capacity for good and evil. Those with power, in quotes, tend to use that power in one way or another. All too often, selfish and evil men and women, supervillains, use it to hurt, control, and destroy. So all we got on this page is that and middling art. The question is, does this page even need to be here? And the answer is no. The dumbest thing on this page is that it is an absolute waste. Because let me bullet point all that text for you. Number one, the basic assumption of superhero stories is that there are superheroes. Number two, in a world where superheroes are real, and this is crucial, people understand them to be real. I know this is mind-blowing sci-fi stuff, but just hang on to your hats because it gets even crazier. Number three, in a world of superheroes who are real and are known to be real, those superheroes defend people. You might say these heroes are heroic. Number four, and this one goes to the broader setting. This is cosmological. This is ethical. This is moral. This is deep philosophical stuff. Number four, humans are capable of good and evil. I mean, the alignment system implies this, but just for the sake of clarity, Kevin Sambita wanted to go on the record as saying that, yes, it's true, a human being can do good things and bad things in this imaginative setting. Finally, number five, a conclusion and corollary to all the other points. And this goes to antagonism. This really sets up the engine that drives the whole setting in all its richness. Number five, evil people with power sometimes use it to hurt others. Imagine, if you can, this world, a fantastical mirror to our own, in which there are good and bad people, and the bad ones do bad things. One of the jobs I've occasionally had is as a writing tutor, and this page definitely engaged that mode for me. This whole page doesn't need to be here. There is not one idea on this page that is not perfectly obvious. There's a little bit in the introduction where they talk about the things that had to be cut from this book for length because the book is too fucking big. Kevin Sambita, my friend, don't come to me whining about that bullshit when on page 39 you have nothing but a picture of a superhero trying and failing to grow a beard and two whole paragraphs devoted to the vital setting information that superheroes exist and humans are capable of both good and evil. This is a rare case where the existence of this page is the dumbest thing on this page. There's simply no reason for it to exist. I have, on rare occasion, in my capacity as a writing tutor, drawn the big X across someone's entire first page of their essay, but never, to my knowledge, have I done that to a professional author, let alone one with a decade of experience and his own publishing company. Writing tutors, of course, do not give Fs. They just sip their coffee and look disgusted. And although you can't see it, dear listener, I'm doing both. This section is going to continue, so having already identified the dumbest thing, I want to warn you ahead of time, speaking of, you know, the academic world, there's going to be a quiz later. For real. So you may want to put in your notes this little snippet that I read before. Quote, such beings, meaning superheroes, who are real, I remind you, are relatively commonplace, say one in a million. So just about every major North American city has one or two, if not more. Today we're discussing page 40 of Heroes Unlimited. The tradition and history section continues on this page, further defining the exciting world of Heroes Unlimited, which is very much like the world of the DC and Marvel comic books that you know so well, except there's actually no except. It is exactly like the worlds of DC and Marvel comics. However, the world was not always in this highly derivative state. It does have a history that led up to this extremely generic moment in time, and that's what this page is about. In a section entitled Heroes Throughout the Ages, we learn about the history of the Heroes Unlimited world, the history of super beings before the current age of superheroism. So what Heroes Unlimited posits is that there have always been super beings. A few characters from history and legend are mentioned by name: Beowulf, Gilgamesh, Vishnu, Bishamon, Merlin, King Arthur, Hercules, Thor, and countless others, it says, were all super beings. And similarly, lots of myths about strange beings, dragons, monsters, demons, and fairies, it says, may describe aliens, mutants, or whatever. There are also some more historical and less mythical figures who were or probably were super beings. Noted among them are Goliath, King David, Alexander the Great, William the Conqueror, Genghis Khan, St. George the Dragon Slayer, Nostradamus, Leonardo da Vinci, Confucius, Geronimo, Thomas Edison, and thousands of others. The page goes on to rationalize that these figures have appeared in waves, so there are a bunch at any one given time, then for a long time there are few at all, and these big waves tend to happen in localized spots. So for example, Mount Olympus would represent one wave of, like, I guess, Greek superheroes, all localized in this one spot, at a time when, as we know, there was nothing of particular interest going on in the history or mythology of other global cultures. As we all know from terrible history classes, the rest of the world politely waited for Greece to stop being interesting before they started doing things. There's some ancient alien-style bullshit in here about how primitive cultures may have achieved their inexplicable advances due to super beings, and then the page basically repeats this idea over and over with everything it can think of. Greece and Rome, the Celtic gods, the stories of Camelot, etc., 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 until finally ending the page by saying, quote, "The debate as to whether or not superhumans have existed throughout human history is likely to never be resolved." An appropriately palladium conclusion to a page that started with, quote, "In the context of this role-playing game setting, we take the premise that supermen have walked the Earth since the beginning of the human race." Palladium, as we know, greatly enjoys the unusual rhetorical strategy of beginning with a thesis and then concluding by backing completely away from that thesis and shrugging. So this page can't really get its story straight about the setting, but you know what? Either way, whether it's true or it's just a theory, it's fine. The dumbest thing in this page, though, is one detail that sort of undermines what they're going for in this whole section. It comes in a passage about how people would come to be renowned as, like, legendary heroes because of superpowers. Quote, "The advantage these powers gave the superbeing would quickly elevate him or her in society and help in achieving goals and, if desired, power. In more primitive days, a boy with super strength, super prowess, or super speed would have had a tremendous advantage over his rivals and opponents. If combined with invulnerability, healing factor, or genius, and then in parentheses, strategy and tactics, the individual would likely become a legendary warrior or leader." Here's where we have a problem. Genius, in parentheses, strategy and tactics, is not a superpower. Genius, parentheses, anything, close parentheses, is not a superpower. There is no genius power. There is no superpower that gives you extra IQ. There is no power that makes you directly better at strategy or tactics. And while there are some powers like extraordinary MA that would make you more charismatic, even the superpower that would give you, like, a divine presence, like make you seem godlike and impressive and like a natural leader to people, that actually comes in a later supplement, Villains Unlimited. It doesn't appear here. So at some point, this book was intended to offer superpowers of genius, leadership, and strategy, but apparently they were cut, which is a real problem because that would be the only obvious superpower of probably most of the people listed on this page, at least among historical figures. I mean, sure, Vishnu, Thor, Merlin, those are all like superheroes of some description, right? It's plausible. But King David, Alexander the Great, William the Conqueror, Leonardo da Vinci, Confucius, Thomas Edison, they're all famous for things that are not connected to any superpowers that are in this book. And especially when you extrapolate that out, like, what they're implying there is that there were these ages of heroism in the past. So, like, today it's superheroes and supervillains, but also, like, the Italian Renaissance, the age of the great judges and kings of the Old Testament, maybe some great ages of invention, like in the Industrial Revolution, were like waves of superheroes. But it's not like in the Renaissance people started flying around and shooting crimson energy beams. Like we have no account of Michelangelo saying "Inuk Chuck" and growing tall enough to paint the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. Pretty much they're all known for like artistic and intellectual accomplishments, less for like killing dudes with lightning. And the things they're famous for in the Italian Renaissance are things that are not in this game. I mean, as far as I can tell, there is literally no way for superpowers to make you better at art. The only thing that influences how good you are at a skill like that is how long you went to school for it. There doesn't even seem to be such a thing as an exceptional natural talent, let alone a superpower for art or strategy or whatever. So this whole premise that like the great generals and inventors of history are superheroes does not work whatsoever. And that's the dumbest thing on this page, especially in light of the fact that they still have in the text that there is a genius superpower that would account for all this, and then they cut it from the fucking book. Even though it's mentioned directly after a page that could absolutely have been cut with no loss. If they had taken out the preceding page, a full page devoted to explaining to us that some human beings are bad, they could have instead put that extra page in the superpower section, not had to cut the genius superpower, and that would have made this whole thing hang together. It's a truly terrible decision that has lots of repercussions in this game because comic books are full of characters whose big power is their intelligence, and this game really can't cope with them at all, even though clearly at some stage it was planned to. On the upside, this means that if you go back in time and make the famous figures of history into superheroes as this page suggests, let's say you go and meet like Petrarch or somebody, there is no superpower to make him like a literary genius, so you're going to have to give him, you know, the power to talk to fish or something like that. Before we leave this page, I do need you to make some more notes in your MDC notebook for the upcoming quiz, because we get another piece of the puzzle about superhero demographics. Quote, North America, particularly the USA and Canada, contain a disproportional part, at least 42% and 15% respectively, of the world's known superbeing population. Now, I'm not going to do the math for you. You're never going to learn about superhero demographics if I walk you through this, but that's another data point with the one we got yesterday, so keep it in mind. And we're going to revisit this tomorrow. Today we're discussing page 41 of Heroes Unlimited. This is the end of the setting portion of the book, where we're going to get our little sketch of the world where all the superheroics of Heroes Unlimited are meant to take place. So far we've talked a little about history. We've talked about the fact that all of the great men of history, and yes, I do mean men, there is not one woman mentioned in the exhaustive list of all the great historical and legendary figures who might have been superheroes. All those great men were superheroes in some unexplained way, since intellectual and artistic genius are not in this game as superpowers, so apparently historical periods like the Islamic Golden Age were just like walking around an MMO, like everybody's just glowing with magical power. You see people jumping around in the skyline. When it's time for the call to prayer, it's just like yelling "Avengers Assemble," and there's like everybody appearing in puffs of smoke and rising up out of the ground, flying in on unicorns. This page completes that picture by explaining that when these big waves of superhero activity would happen in history, very often the good guys and the bad guys would align into opposite sides and then have a climactic conflict. Presumably, what the game is referring to here is something like the Second World War, since they're about to go into some modern instances of this, like the American Revolutionary War, the Second World War. But it doesn't make a ton of sense when you look back at the historical periods they've just talked about, because, like, who would you characterize as the villains of the Renaissance? Like, did Dante actually open up a portal to hell and just, like, ran wild all over Italy until, you know, Da Vinci and the rest of them had a crossover event and finally sealed it? It's been a long time since I really took a history class, but I don't remember the climactic battle that ended the Renaissance. In a funny way, it kind of shows how much people narrativize the historical events that are close to them, because it's very easy to identify the at least supposed good guys and bad guys of recent history. But like William the Conqueror, I don't know, like, were the Danes trying to discover the anti-life equation? Did he save us all? But anyway, take our word for it. All of the great and distinctive eras of world history boil down to a dramatic battle between good and evil. And in keeping with that trend, in the modern day, superheroes have emerged as the latest expression of superbeings in North America, in similar response to dramatic battles between monolithic good and evil. For example, this page informs us that the first known or suspected superheroes of what would become the United States, they emerged during the American Revolutionary War. It does note here that there were a few superbeings hundreds of years before in various Indian tribes, but neither the conflicts among indigenous people, nor the conflict between the Americans and the British, nor the immense and world-shattering conflict between European colonizers and indigenous peoples were enough to really get the cosmic forces of karma off their asses to start doling out superpowers. That didn't really happen until World War II, when the United States, which the book even notes, was an odd place for this to happen since the fighting was actually happening in Europe. But for some reason, the cosmic forces of karma decided to start sprinkling out superpowers in North America so that the champions of justice and injustice could pretty much spend their time fighting each other in New York City while the regular humans handled like D-Day and things of that nature. The numbers were still relatively low at this point. There were about 70 super beings, heroes and villains, who showed up between 1940 and 1950. So not yet a huge number. There was a decline in the 50s and 60s, just like the real-life comic book industry, just like the Marvel and DC superhero universes. God forbid we should depart from cliché. Expect the expected is the Palladium motto. And if you do, you won't be disappointed, because in the late 60s, just as you would predict, superhero activity mysteriously picks up again, and the trend continues until the present day, meaning the late 90s, as of the time this game was written. You're going to want to pull out your MDC notebook and take one final note before the quiz. Quote, "Today there are at least 1,000 super beings in the United States alone, with more popping up every day, perhaps 2 to 3 times more than is officially acknowledged when including those who have chosen to ignore or conceal their unique powers and live ordinary lives." It goes on to say, quote, "Conservative estimates suggest that 1 in every 1,000,000 people possesses super abilities." The page goes on to say that superheroes are mostly popular, but there's anti-mutant sentiment, blah, blah, blah. It's a generic superhero setting with no particular flavor, and we're done talking about it. All right, as promised, it's time for a quiz. Based on the information in this book, assuming that the super being population is uniform outside of the hotspots of Canada and the United States, in 1998, how many known super beings would there have been in Berlin in Germany and in Kamloops, British Columbia, Canada? Here's a hint. The answer is the dumbest thing on this page. Now, I could tell you to pause the podcast, but I know you're probably listening to it while you're doing something else or you're on your way somewhere. I'm going to take the extraordinary step of releasing the answer in a bonus episode that will come out maybe tomorrow on Sunday or maybe on Monday along with the regular episode. The reason, of course, is that I have done way more math than is reasonable or healthy in the course of this podcast, and I want you to do some. I want you to fucking work this problem. I warn you that the answer won't be exact. There's a lot of fuzzy figures involved in this, you know. Conservative estimates are 1 in a 1,000,000, at least 42% in the US and 15% in Canada. The real number is about 2 to 3 times higher. So, you know, round appropriately, predict what I want the truth to be, and how I have therefore fudged the numbers, but, you know, there will be a math-like feel to the answer to this question. So get to work and join me tomorrow, or Monday, for a bonus episode where we find out the hard, hard numbers behind the dumbest thing on this page on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. Contact or check out the show wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. And if you like my tiny little podcast, consider giving me a tiny bit of money at ko-fi.com/megadumb. That's ko-fi.com/megadumb. MDC, Palladium Books, Heroes Unlimited, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This season's theme song is To the Top by Art of Escapism, whose work you can find at soundcloud.com/artofescapism. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.